brand new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast, where the heroes in the half shell come to join together in episode 199. We are one away, the penultimate episode to our bicentennial. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long, the Terminator.
The Terminator.
Long is back with us hanging out. He's going to make two episodes in a row because he'll be here next week too.
Yes, sir.
And if he happens to make three in a row, that's what they would call a winning streak.
Oh, yeah. or forced we'll against see. His own will. No, I'm joking.
Oh, forced against your own will?
No.
Yes.
You know, only Matt forces you to do things that you might not like to do. And so, you know, because Matt's weird like that.
Squeal like a pig, Matt. No.
Damn. Squeal.
What movie is that from? I feel like that's from a movie that I can't.
Deliverance.
Quite pinpoint. Deliverance.
Whatever you guys do in your spare time, it's, you know, between y'all. So, Hal, have you fellas been this week?
My first day of my vacation.
Long, you look like you're ready for bed, Long.
Well, no, it's like one of those things where one of my bosses, I have too many bosses at my job, and one of them texts me, tell me that I have to show up at 5 a.m. because I might send me out on the truck. On Tuesday morning.
No. Oh, wow.
Because we're expecting high sales of wine, you know? Aces.
Hmm.
So, I don't know what you saw. Did you get wine today, Mark?
Yeah.
On Fridays? Okay. Did you get a lot?
Yeah.
Was it a pallet or
not
two?
Not as big as Tuesday's trucks. About a pallet.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, anyways... Yeah, so he basically hung that thought over my head for, you know, ruining my vacation, you know? It's like, okay, thanks for that. Whatever. So done. This whole pandemic thing is forcing companies to take advantage of us.
At least you get a 3-day weekend. I have to work Monday. So,
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of got screwed over too long. I feel you. We've got a new market unit, sales director, whatever. For our branch, and they're like, we want the top 10 of every supervisor stores visited every day. So I was supposed to be on vacation starting tomorrow and taking the kids to and family to Galveston to a family's beach house and have a small gathering there. But I have to go visit like four stores before I go to Galveston. And then I have to come back Monday and visit seven stores.
That's not a vacation. So,
it's not a vacation at all. I was like, they're like, yeah, just making sure this is okay with everyone. Does anyone have anything to add? And I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of on vacation next week. Wasn't planning on this. They're like, oh, please, please, please. And I'm like, you're giving me like two off days. It's like, I waited half a year.
They're not a vacation. They're not docking that. They're not taking that time away from you, are they? That vacation.
No, they have to give it to you back.
Yeah, they better.
But they give you crappy days. They're like, oh yeah, you can have a Tuesday and a Wednesday.
Man, just call in sick on like, those assholes. Who cares? Fuck them.
I know, right? Just stay home.
Fuck them.
Shit. No, on top of all that, we're supposed to be finishing up Republicans. We're supposed to be finishing up our first day at Compalooza right now. You know, that's where we're supposed to have been this weekend. Doing this show live on the Compalooza floor. That was our plan to celebrate 30 years of the Ninja Turtles movie. But no, we're not at Compalooza because of pandemic shutting down the whole fucking world. So we're making the most of it, I guess. I'm a little sleepy.
Comic-palooza.
I'm a little sleepy, too.
I don't know. It's like, seems like the show floor of Comic-palooza is slowly being taken over by stuff that's not even related to geek culture. So... like, I was like, oh, look, there's the lightsaber stall, and then, like, right next to it is the oil and gas drilling expo. And
I just look at it as they have bills to pay, you know. So, I don't know.
That's probably a good point. It's like, hey, these people want to pay for a space. Let's take the check.
Yeah, you know, it's money, I guess, you know. Compalooza is a little different than it used to be, a little more you know, corporate, but it is what it is, I guess. I'd still would have rather been there having fun doing the show live than doing it like this, that's for sure. So can't deny that possibility, you know. But next year, hopefully we'll be back there and be stronger than ever and do a show there next year. And as we'll be almost halfway to 300 episodes by then, by this time next year. So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
To think. But yeah, I'm a little sleepy too. Right before we started the show, I was sitting on the chair with my daughter, and she was making me warm and sleepy, and I almost fell asleep. So I was a little groggy. I'm like, oh shit, we got to do the podcast. So yeah, that's what happens. So, my kids snuggled. But yeah. But other than that, yeah, I'm tired. I only have one more week of work, then I'm on vacation the week after next. So
yeah,
nice.
Yeah. And, they won't cancel mine because I would have fits in the back room and, tear off all my clothes and be like, fuck y'all. Just kidding.
Kick down the pallets.
No. Yeah, I would just knock pallets over and be like, no. But the world's not quite ready for that, you know. And by the way, Matt, I have to call you out on a... Thank you for reminding me of that fucking bitch, Chewbacca mom. You know. Huh?
The Chewbacca mom.
Oh yeah. I saw that Facebook. I saw that Facebook post, and I'm like, oh, he's baiting Mark, and Mark took the bait.
Yeah. And there comes James doing it too, bait me also. I'm like,
yes.
Fuckers.
They kept inviting her to baseball games and stuff? Yeah,
and talk shows. She can take her damn 15 minutes of fame and shove them up her Chewbacca mask ass.
That's okay, because last week I was attacking golf, the sport of golf, for 2 or 3 days straight. I did a post on Facebook attacking golf.
Yes.
You know, that's what happens whenever you get, quarantined. You attack things that you probably don't even really care about, but you just feel like attacking.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know.
All right. Well, you know. Golf sucks. I mean, that's just what it is.
Yep.
Well, let's get into today's show then officially. As we always tell people, download this. We're going to tell people what we streamed, watched, played this past week during our quarantine hours of hanging out at home and we're not working. What have you guys watched or streamed or checked out this week?
I'll start off since I was gone. Let's see. I've been playing a lot of Persona 5 Royal, and I'm about to reach the point where I left off on the original Persona 5. Because Persona 5 Royal is a PS4 game, and it's like basically the special edition of one of the best turn-based RPGs, or Japanese RPGs, that came out in recent years. If you guys have a chance, just check out a review on the game on YouTube somewhere, and you'll get the idea of how it is. Last night I started watching the Harley Quinn show. I bought the whole season, and it's a pretty funny show.
I've heard good things about that.
It's a very funny show. It's quick-witted. So there, a lot of jokes will fly overhead, but you have to rewatch some episodes too. It's like, oh, okay, I get the joke now. That sort of thing too. The Harley Quinn show is pretty funny. It's very vulgar and very violent. So, not vulgar in a sexually obscene way, but it's a lot of cursing in it. So,
there's a lot of cursing, a lot of innuendo in it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I heard the second season's doing pretty well, too. And I heard that Stargirl on the DC Universe, it's pretty good from what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
It's created by Geoff Johns and being written by Geoff Johns.
Right.
Yeah. He's definitely one of my favorite comic book writers out there. If the story's interesting.
His Green Lantern run was one of my favorite comic runs I ever read.
Yeah, and there's something about the way he writes. It's not as gimmicky as Brian Michael Bendis's writing, I don't know, Brian Michael Bendis likes to waste a lot of panels with one word captions. So it's just weird the way he writes. But anyways, and then I watched Hidden Figures. It's a historical drama, and it's about the three African American women that were engineers during NASA's founding years of space program. And cool. It's a very fascinating
movie. I've actually seen it.
Yeah, it's a really good movie.
It was a good movie.
Yeah, very, very good movie. I looked at the Amazon score, 5 stars. It was like 5 stars almost unanimously. It was like, it's not 4.5 stars. It's like 5 stars straight up. You know?
Yeah. So, that was a good movie.
Yeah. And a lot of the stuff, major stuff that happened really, I mean, like, when you think of the word computer, you know, we think of the devices now, but I didn't realize that the actual word computer was a job during the days of before IBM and all that. It was like if you had a degree in mathematician, if you're a mathematician, you had a degree in math, you were hired to be a computer to do calculations and stuff. And the job of a computer person, it's the occupation is 98% women back in the day, because they felt that women were better at math and men were more at, you know, the engineering types. And and then there's like, they were talking about equations where women were working on that would last 3 days straight, you know? So yeah. So you're doing like math calculation problems that would last you 3 days to do. I'm like,
that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, we're talking about.
I can't imagine. I don't even want to spend 5 minutes on a math question, let alone 3 days.
Yeah. And it's amazing that the main character, they showed her at 12 years old being offered to go to college at 12 years old.
Right.
Because she was that smart in math. You know? Yeah. And then, she was the one who, like, when they were doing rocket launches, she had to figure out figure out the equation to all the velocity, the mass, the speed of a rocket leaving Earth, and then finding the right orbit trajectory, and then landing back at the exact spot on Earth you wanted to land. You know, she was that smart. Like John Glenn, the first astronaut to orbit space, American astronaut to orbit space, said that he wouldn't go into space unless what was her name, Katherine Johnson, verified the calculations, you know, because the IBM computer at that time kept messing up the calculations. Yeah. So yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I remember I watched it a while back when it first came out on video, and but yeah, it was a good movie.
Yeah.
How's it along?
Yeah, that's it. Sorry. Back to you. How about you, Matt?
2 weeks. You're no.
Yeah. So some of those $5 movies that popped up on Vudu, went ahead and bought The Craft because the wife likes The Craft with Neve Campbell,
Baruza Balk.
Yeah. And I was, you know, while we were watching it, I was like, you know, I was like,
it's so 90s.
It is 90s. Yeah. And Charm ripped it off, like, because apparently the idea was to turn this into a TV show, and the director pitched it to WB, and WB said, you know, no thanks. And then a year later, Charmed came out using the same music as their theme song. for Charmed.
I remember that. Yeah.
And there were some cool facts about that movie. The scene when they invoke Memnon and they're over by the sea, they had some weird things happen while they were conjuring that. And the name is vaguely similar to a sea god, and the tide started rising, and birds and bats started like flying overhead, and then whenever they said, "I invoke thee," all the electricity cut out all at once. and they said it was very terrifying, and they had to refilm it. It was weird.
Oh, so, I thought you were talking about a scene in the movie. Witchcraft. Yeah.
No. Like actually, like while they were filming it.
Yeah.
And they had like a witchcraft advisor, and they're like, "Yeah, Menal sounds similar to Nemal, and he's the spirit of the sea." And they're like, "You probably invoked a sea spirit inadvertently." And I was like, "Wow, that's kind of freaky." So it was cool kind of like digging into that. And then we watched The Mask, and the kids wanted to go see they wanted to see SpongeBob, the first SpongeBob movie with David Hasselhoff.
That's a great movie.
Goofy Goober.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about a funny scene from that movie actually a couple days ago where SpongeBob and Patrick they thought they were men just because they wore fake mustaches. And yes. Then they bumped into
we're invincible
because we have these mustaches. And then they bump into Hasselhoff the bounty hunter. And then the bounty hunter's like, "You think you're men because you have those mustaches? Oh, let me show you what a real mustache is." He forces himself to grow a mustache.
Yeah.
And then totally emasculate SpongeBob and Patrick.
That was funny.
That's a funny scene.
Trying to think that almost 200 episodes into the show, and we have dropped to SpongeBob levels all of a sudden.
What? Don't tell me you don't like SpongeBob.
It's okay. I mean, I don't hate it. I took Michael to see that second one a few years ago, and I was like,
"Oh yeah,
no.
It was really bizarre and weird." I think you had to be on drugs to really appreciate that movie.
As Antonio Banderas,
it was weird, and it had a weird talking dolphin that made no sense.
Yes, that had the same powers as Vision.
I think it's on Netflix, it's weird.
I've only seen the first movie, but and the television show itself is pretty funny though. Biff Tannen, the guy who played Biff Tannen voiced a couple of characters on the SpongeBob show, and
he's Larry the Lobster.
No, he played various characters. It was just not
okay.
Yeah, and there was one episode where he played a bouncer for a tough biker bar, and SpongeBob and Patrick wanted to get into the biker bar, but the bouncer's like, "No, you guys are too wussy, too whippy to get in. Mm-hmm. Maybe you want that bar over there." And they were sitting at the Weenie Hut General. I was like, "The Weenie Hut General? We don't go there." No, oh no, not that one. The other bar. It's like the Super Weenie Hut General.
Yeah.
It's a funny episode. So many great jokes in that one. But anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I think back. I know I watched a couple of things. Well, I mean, the big one I watched this week was the new DC animated film Justice League Dark Apocalypse. Not sure why they titled it Justice League Dark. I guess because John Constantine is a major player in the film, but it's very much just a Justice League film. But I tell you what, DC, starting with the Justice League War, had a loosely connected universe in these films, tied into the New 52 comics and there were still a few one-shot movies, but there was a continuity between them going all the way into this one. And it all comes together quite nicely. If you pay attention to it, it's very similar to what Marvel did with their Avengers saga. Only Justice, or only DC, did an animated way. And it makes you wish that they could have done their animated universe in that sense, because Apocalypse War is really, really good. I'm not kidding you when I said in my text that as much as I love Batman Under the Red Hood, this might be the best movie they made. It's solid from beginning to end.
This one is a
really good.
Yeah, this one's the last DC.
They're gonna do. I mean, they're still gonna continuity, make films, right? No more continuity right now. But it connects everything nicely. There's appearances from most of the characters that appear. I'm gonna stay non-spoiler because it's worth watching. It's brutal. It earns its R rating, that's for sure. To the point where there's moments in it that even had me go, "Wow, they did that? Wow." I mean, it's not just gore to be gory. There's some truly shocking moments in it. They even had me being pleasantly and surprised by the choices they made in this film to throw no punches and to make a truly grown-up animated Justice League film. But it also makes you go, man, God dang it, why can't they do this on the big screen? It's a little bit longer than some of the other ones. It's a full 90 minutes, so they definitely go out with a bang. It's epic. It feels epic. Some really good stuff. Highly recommend watching it. It takes place almost immediately after the events of Reign of Superman. I know Batman Hush has come out since then, but really the stuff that happens in Batman Hush doesn't tie that much into this film. It's more of a direct sequel to The Death of Superman and Reign of Superman. And you can honestly, you could watch, if you watch The Flashpoint Paradox, Justice League War, The Death of Superman, Reign of Superman, and this one, you'll know what's going on. So you really don't have to watch all 12, 13 films. You could probably watch those four, and you'll know everything that's going on. You know, there's some other minor tie-ins and stuff, but nothing that you have to see. But it's really, really good. It kind of has made me wish that they were going to continue more of these with the continuity. There's been some talk that they're going to still do films with continuity, but they're going to use the Rebirth stuff, you know, like DC's doing now, which I guess that would make sense. This New 52 is a few years old now. You know, they've been doing Rebirth now for, what, 2-3 years?
Yeah, so it's way old now.
It is kind of time to move on from the New 52 stuff in the animated universe.
I think the DC Rebirth stuff was really good when the
came out. I've heard a lot of good things about it. So
yeah,
so we'll see. I know their next animated film is Superman Man of Tomorrow, and that's as far as they've announced. They normally every year announce their DC animated films at San Diego Comic-Con, but with no Comic-Con this year, I would imagine they're going to announce them in some different fashion what they're doing next.
Yeah,
but good stuff. Highly recommend Justice League Dark Apocalypse War. Well worth it. And so, you know, I'm going to have to watch it again this weekend. There's a lot happens in it. That's all I'm going to say. And it's just like, it's really good stuff. And it's going to make you think, like, man, this is what we should get on the big screen. But we haven't so far. But we've got way later on the show, we've got a lot of Justice League stuff to talk about because there was some big news that came out this week. Other than that, I think that's really the only new thing I watched this week. I did pick up the new Blu-ray release of Top Gun and was watching that in 4K, and it looks quite spectacular for a 1986 film in 4K. And I'm still excited for the sequel, even if it got pushed back later this year and maybe get pushed back further. I mean, who knows if we'll actually get new movies this year at any point. We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, Warner Brothers insists that Tenet's still coming out in July, but I just don't believe that's going to happen. I have a feeling that there are not going to be any new movies this summer. It's going to be kind of weird. So, but I've come to accept it. It is what it is. So, and but yeah, that's feels like that's all I watched. Other than I've definitely gotten my $25 worth of buying Scoob. The kids have watched it a lot. It's like, okay, I'm done with it already. I don't want to watch it anymore. I've seen it all. Funny. But it's a good animated film.
Even growing up as a kid, I was never really a fan of Scooby-Doo.
Well,
really?
Yeah.
Were you a fan of Hanna-Barbera cartoons in general?
I did like their racing show. What was that
one? Oh yeah. Cuz we're all the we're like the Smurf Gargamel races and
no, the Hanna-Barbera. I don't think they had Smurfs in that one.
Yeah, Gargamel, right?
Smurfs aren't Hanna-Barbera. Smurfs
yeah.
are owned by someone.
You know, the one with Snagglepuss and...
Megilla Gorilla?
Yeah, yeah.
There's some nice Hanna-Barbera nods in this. Let's just say there was talks that they wanted to do a Hanna-Barbera animated universe, sort of. You can see where they laid some groundwork for that in this. There's some pleasant cameos in this that are like, wow, that's kind of cool. They did that. No Space Ghost. I was hoping Space Ghost would show up, but he didn't. But there is some other nice Hanna-Barbera cameos in it. So, you know, if you were a fan of the old Hanna-Barbera cartoons, you might be surprised by some of the stuff they did in Scoob.
What about the Zoids? Is it Zoids or... You know what I'm talking about?
Zoids and Hanna-Barbera?
With the, they were like two blob-looking things.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I think they're Hanna-Barbera. Yeah.
I always felt like they came on with.
Are you talking about the humanoids?
Humanoids. Humanoids.
I don't think that's Hanna-Barbera. I think it's something else.
I don't know. I'd have to look it up and see what it was. But yeah, no, Scoob's not bad. Bad or not?
Not good
that's
either.
That's about it this week.
So he's not bad, but I said it's not good either. It's average.
You haven't even seen it, so that doesn't count.
Oh, okay. So you're saying it's good then?
Yeah. No, it's a good family film. It's just the kids have played it so much. It's like, you know, like stop playing it over and over again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a mark of a good family film is something you don't mind watching over and over again.
Right. You know.
So there's very few movies that could do
like
that.
Like Incredibles.
Yeah, that's a very good one.
I think the Incredibles is overrated.
Oh, I need to get Incredibles 2. I really do like that sequel. It's a pretty good sequel, I thought.
Yeah, I liked it.
Well, it's on Netflix for a little while until it goes to Disney Plus.
Yeah.
But so Just League Dark Apocalypse War. Watch that son of a bitch. You guys will like it. So. But let's get into today's feature film.
I'll watch it when HBO Max comes out.
Yeah, a lot of the DC stuff's supposed to be on there. You know, DC Universe, word is that DC Universe will be, I read somewhere that probably by September, October, it's going to be phased out and everything's going to be on HBO Max. I guess contracts are going to keep it online for a little while longer, but it's going to be going by the end of the year.
Yeah, I hope Doom Patrol is
I've read. Well, they already announced that season 2 of Doom Patrol is already going to be on HBO Max. So
yeah,
yeah. So that's the first sign that, and I think they already said Titan season 3 is probably going to be on HBO Max too. So that tells you it's all going there. So yeah, but let's get today's feature film then. Man, it's hard to believe it's been 30 years since this movie came out. It just means we're getting older. In 1990, I remember my mom taking me and my brother and my her friend Loretta and their kids all taking us to see a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I was probably in eighth grade when this came out. It sounds about right because I hadn't started high school quite yet. So long year, probably a couple years younger than that. Matt, you were barely 1.5, 2 years old. No, well, you were 86, so you were maybe 4 when this came out.
And, yeah.
But you know, the Ninja Turtles hit. The comic book pages in 84, I believe. And then a few years later, we got the cartoon and action figures. The Ninja Turtles were taking things over worldwide as far as their popularity. One of the biggest, most successful cartoons and toy lines ever made. And, of course, that's going to lead to a live-action film. We got, in 1990, we got a live-action version of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Long, you weren't here for a couple weeks. You want to summarize this film?
Yeah, sure. Little forewarning. When I tried to rewatch this movie, I only got through 3/4 of it. So, because the voodoo.
But you know the gist of it.
Yeah. So, you know, basically, a crime wave hits New York City, and mysterious heroes come out from the sewers, and they are the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And, it's basically the battle against the Foot Clan, led by Shredder and Master, what's his name? Master, what's
Splinter?
His? No, not Splinter.
Oh.
Shredder's Toadie. What's his name?
Oh.
The bald guy.
Damn it. I don't know his name.
Was it Master Tatsu? Was it Tatsu? I don't know.
Maybe it was Tatsu.
But, maybe. And then, anyways, a big fight happens on top of a building. Turtles won. Shredder becomes trash compactor. And April O'Neil and Casey Jones lives happily ever after. Right?
The
right?
End.
Right?
Seemingly so.
Tetsu.
Yeah.
Tetsu.
Yeah, Tetsu.
Yeah, basically, it is that simple of a plot. But it's, you know, what's funny is unless you're a real hardcore fan, people don't realize that this is very much based on the first episode of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comic book, which or first issue, which was much the original comic was much darker in tone. At some point they even talked about doing the movie darker in tone, but you know, the New Line Cinema was going to distribute this thing, and they felt like, you know, hey, we've got to sell this movie to general audiences, and the cartoon's popular, so we don't want to make it dark. In fact, in post-production, they added a lot more sound effects to this film, like the turtles with their little woo-woos and all that, to make it a little more family-friendly, which I thought was kind of funny, because the movie was already family-friendly dialogue-wise, but they wanted to make it even more silly, I guess. But the movie's not overly silly. It's silly just enough, I think, to appeal to general audiences and to kids. But yeah, so it is very much based on that first issue of the original comic where the Foot Clan were taking over New York. The Turtles show up. They fight Shredder. At the end of the first issue of the comic, they kill Shredder, just like they essentially do in this movie. They kill Shredder. So there is still some dark undertones of this movie, even if it is more of a kid-friendly film. But it holds up well, remarkably. I was watching it the other day, and I'm like, this is still a lot of fun to watch. You know, sure, the costumes and the are a little dated, and some of the general choreographed the fights. But overall, I think the movie's still pretty decent for 30 years later.
Yeah, and it's produced by Golden Harvest, which is famous for a lot of Hong Kong martial arts movies.
Right.
Including Lee's... Bruce Lee's Chinese Connection and The Big Boss. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that and they wanted to make the film. They used real martial artists for the film and things like that because they felt that if you were dealing with a idea as silly as the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were, you had to sell the film by making it also as real as you could. So they wanted to make sure the martial arts did look real.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Shredder came back in Altered Carbon and in Always Be My Maybe.
Oh, yeah, that actor. He's been around a long time. Matt, when was the first time you saw Ninja Turtles being the young one of the group?
I saw Ninja Turtles 2 first because I was 7 whenever it came out. And so family took me there because that was more kid-friendly. There wasn't as much violence. I don't even know if they show that many weapons in the second one. Of course, we have Kevin Nash's Super Shredder in that one, and the Ninja Rap, probably the most notable things from Ninja Turtles 2. The first Ninja
Turtle...
Who did
the Ninja Rap?
Oh, it was Vanilla Ice, man.
There you go. Don't try to hide your...
Hey, but you know what, though? Vanilla Ice owns it, man. I've seen in interviews where he says, hey, that's one of my biggest hits ever. I have more people ask me about that song than even Ice Ice Baby. And he's come to accept that, like, hey, that was a big deal for him. You know?
Well, it also ended his career as far as people seeing him as a serious rapper. Apparently, like, I watched a VH1 special way back on Vanilla Ice. And they're like, yeah, after Ninja Rap, they're just like, oh, this guy, he's campy. You know, he panders to kids.
Anyway. I mean, he was basically a one-hit wonder.
Yeah. That and gangster rap became a big thing.
Yeah.
Right. And NWA came out either the same time or shortly after that. So yeah, it even killed MC Hammer's career too. You know,
that's true.
And a lot of more of the lighter rappers. Not lighter, but lighter in the party going type of rap. Yeah, the fun rap.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I probably didn't see it until 94, I want to say. I saw this after Turtles 2, and I think maybe it was because maybe my parents thought it was a little violent. Because I know, you know, maybe they sided with Jim Henson on this. You know, Jim Henson didn't like that there was so much violence and weapons, I guess, as opposed to what he was looking for. But ultimately, you know, he was happy to provide the costumes and advanced animatronics, you know, as, you know, with his participation in this movie. But
with Judith Hogue, who plays April, she did not come back for the sequel because she didn't like all the violence of the movie, which I found kind of funny or ironic because, like, you read the script and it's called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Did you not know there was going to be violence in the movie when you signed on?
Yeah.
So it's like, but yet you were mad that you were in the movie? Okay. Go ahead, Matt. What were you going to say?
Yeah. And then in number three, like, even though it's like, you know, kind of go, you bring back the swords and stuff from the first one, but they have like an adult joke in there where April, she, you know, she's wearing a dress, but, you know, they have to trek through mud. So she rips her dress and makes it into a skirt. And Donatello and Michelangelo go, shwing. And I'm like, really? I'm like, let's, you can't make it into a kid movie or argue that it's for kids you're putting a Wayne's World joke in there. A
little bestiality with your kid movies is no big deal.
Yeah.
Turtles of women.
Mm-hmm. Howard the Duck.
But yeah, I enjoyed all of them. I remember going to Burger King and getting 1987 Ninja Turtles cartoon VHSs and bringing them home and watching them. I still have some in storage and stuff. And they used to have tons of turtle toys. And I still have a partially complete Technodrome. I just have to find the other pieces. Yeah.
No. Long, what was your impressions growing up of the Turtles and when the first time you saw the movie and stuff?
Oh, man. I know when that movie came out in the theaters, I was pretty much had no one to take me to the theaters to go watch it. So I kind of had to live vicariously through friends' retelling of the story to me, you know, because both my parents were too busy working at that time. And I was like, whatever, you know, but I was a really big fan of the cartoon series. And I really wanted to see the show, and I think I finally got to see it in the theaters, like in the when it reached the dollar theaters. Mm-hmm. And I really liked it. I thought it was pretty faithful to the first issue of the comic book series. And right. when it went to VHS, I definitely rewatched it a ton of times. And I think I was in the fourth grade when the movie came out. That's how, that's the age difference between me and Mark. I was in fourth grade and Mark was in eighth. So I was
seventh or eighth, one of the two, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it was a pretty cool movie experience, I had to say. And I really liked Secret of the Ooze Part 2. The only thing I was disappointed in Secret of the Ooze was they used Tonka or Rezar. I will wish that they used Bebop and Rocksteady instead.
Yeah.
When I saw Part 2 when I was in high school, I was like, what is this crap? Where's Bebop and Rocksteady?
Yeah. Yeah, but I was happy to find out that the modern Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, the second one, mm-hmm. Really went heavy into the TV show inspirations. So,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I've never seen the reboot, but I did see bits and pieces of the second movie, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to knock the reboots. They are what they were, but so my impressions are, like, I remember from this era of the Turtles, it's like, you know, coming out of Transformers and G.I. Joe and some of the things that we were into, and He-Man, and then there was Turtles was like the new kid on the block, but it was hard to avoid it, because it was starting to take over. It was everywhere. Star Wars was dying out. He-Man, Transformers were slowly dying out. And Turtles came along at the right time, I felt, that it picked up the slack from those other franchises, kind of ending their runs. And Turtles owes a lot of that to their success, I think, to people finding something new. It was just good timing. You know, the comic book, you know, the story between Eastman and Laird selling out is very famous. You know, I can't remember who it was. I think Eastman wanted to sell merchandise and Laird didn't, and they fought over it. He basically sold the cartoon rights by telling him, don't worry, they're not going to make it silly and kid-friendly. Then it was silly and kid-friendly, and Laird was pretty pissed off. But at the end of the day, they both succeeded greatly from this and made a lot of money off the Ninja Turtles. Action figures were everywhere. The cartoon was everywhere. Like you said, Happy Meal toys, you name it. The Ninja Turtles were all over the place. I remember pumping tons of fucking quarters in the Ninja Turtles arcade game at Fame City at the World City Mall, trying to beat that thing. Still one of the greatest arcade games ever made. And I remember seeing the movie in theaters and just thinking, wow, this is cool. The Ninja Turtles are live action.
What was it called at Memorial City? Fame, I thought it was Tilt.
No, Fame City. Tilt was after Fame City.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, it used to be Fame City, then it became Tilt. It was like three different things, but Fame City was the big one.
Okay.
So, you know, turtles were everywhere. They were a big part of pop culture in the late 80s and early 90s. And now here we are 30 years later, and they're still a big part of pop culture. There's still Ninja Turtles comics. There's still action figures on the shelf. The Nickelodeon cartoon has brought back the Ninja Turtles to a new generation. The new movies have brought to a new generation, whether you hate the reboots or not. I always look at those reboots as like they're not necessarily made for us. They're made for a new generation of kids that get them in the Turtles. And on that point, I think the new movies did their job. They did a good job for the kids. You know, maybe us old folks like me and Long want to see a really serious Ninja Turtle movie where it's more like the comic book, but that's not what we're going to get because they're in the business to sell these movies to families and children so that they can watch them.
I never had a problem with the kiddie, you know, the children oriented turtles because I grew up on it, and, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. In fact,
yeah, I think my
I actually held the very first issue of Ninja Turtles in my hands. Like the actual first issue. It was black and white. There was no color in it whatsoever.
I've got a reprint of it, but not obviously not an original. Yeah. My earliest Ninja Turtle issue I have like number 10 in relatively good condition. But yeah, so, you know, I think the movie holds up well. It's interesting cuz Quentin Tarantino's longtime editor Sally Menke actually edited this film. It was one of her first films she ever edited. In fact, it was her first. Who thought that years later she would go from doing a kid's film to doing a very violent, lots of bad language film for Quentin Tarantino. The hideout that's used by the Foot Clan is the same as Top Dollar's Club in The Crow. Yeah, it's also was used in the Super Mario Brothers movie too, which was a bad live action adaptation from that era, you know.
Yeah.
Where the Ninja Turtles movie, to me is not a bad live action adaptation. You know, it was a lower budget. They only had distribution rights from New Line Cinema. Most of this film was considered an independent film because they used outside financiers to get this movie made. And at the time, it was one of the most successful independent films by making $67 million domestically and over $150 worldwide. Until I think it held the record until the Blair Witch movie came out, and it broke the record for independent films. I could be wrong on that, but I know Ninja Turtles held the record for independent film for a while because it was considered an independent movie. And I think with what they had to work with the budget and the Jim Henson costumes, this movie is really well done. It's not too long, so it's paced well. It's only an hour and a half, which I think helps it a lot, so it keeps your attention. All the actors in it try really hard. Like, even the bad guys are trying to be menacing, and they try to make this movie as believable as they can. And I texted you guys, man, Elias Koteas, I think he's fantastic as Casey Jones. much better than Stephen Amell was in the reboot. I really like the way he portrays Casey. He's kind of tough, kind of goofy, kind of silly, but he plays
he's charismatic for sure. So well.
Yeah, he's very charismatic. And he loved the character. He still does interviews where he talks about it. He always wanted to come back in a reboot to make a cameo, but he wasn't asked. He was always a big fan of those movies he did. And he's really good in the role.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and not to mention the franchise itself spawned some really good video games as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, besides the first NES game, which was pretty freaking hard, and you know, the arcade game was good. The NES version of the arcade game was pretty good. The Super Nintendo Tournament Fighters was really good. The fighting game of the Ninja Turtles, and then the Turtles in Time Super Nintendo was pretty good. Yeah, Matt, did you ever own a Super Nintendo? Or
I did.
Yeah. Did you ever play Turtles in Time?
I did.
Yeah, that's a fun game. Yeah. Yeah, you throw enemies towards the screen. You know, that was pretty cool.
I mainly played, I liked it, but I played a mix of that, Killer Instinct, and Super Mario Kart.
At Mr. Pixel's Arcade right there on Jones Road, they actually have Turtles in Time.
Oh, wow.
Arcade. They don't have the full box. They have an emulator box that has a bunch of games on it, and Turtles in Time is on there. And me and Wyatt actually played it and beat it at the arcade just right before COVID-19. We were at the arcade. We played it, and we had fun beating it.
Is that an actual arcade?
Yeah, yeah. There's an arcade right there behind the Papa John's over there behind 311 or in front of 311. Yeah.
Oh.
Oh yeah, behind it. And there's Mr. Pixel's arcade over there. It's like $8 all you can play. I mean, it's probably got 25 games in there, but it's fun. You know, it's pretty neat. Some nostalgic stuff.
Yeah. You know?
And he's closed right now, but I'm sure he'll reopen eventually, hopefully.
Yeah, and also, do you guys remember when the Turtles came out? There were like a bunch of copycat franchises that try to emulate the success, like Street Sharks. Remember Street Sharks?
Oh, Street Sharks.
And Battletoads.
I love Battletoads. I played that on Genesis.
Yeah, and to a certain extent, Bucky O'Hare. You guys remember Bucky O'Hare? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sounds familiar.
It's a space show with.
What about Earthworm Jim? Was that a spinoff?
No, it wasn't. Okay. It was its own video game. It was never a TV show, but yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah. Maybe it was only one season, but I do remember Earthworm Jim being a Saturday cartoon for a small stint.
Yeah.
It didn't last long, for sure.
Yeah, but there were a bunch of cartoons that had animal. You know, anthropomorphic characters. So,
oh, yeah. Right.
Am I missing any? I named Street Shark.
Animorphs?
Animorphs?
Maybe Animorphs.
Well, no, that's later, though. I'm talking like right there in the same, within the 2-year span of Turtles, you know? But I know, I remember Bucky O'Hare was part of that, too. So.
And Bucky O'Hare was a combination of a ripoff of Turtles and a character from a Star Wars comic book. That was done where they had a rabbit looking character in the old Marvel Star Wars comics. Yeah, it's kind of a combination of those two. Yeah,
Samurai Pizza Cats.
Yeah, I remember those.
What about? Remember SWAT Cats?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was actually a cool cartoon.
Yeah, I remember that show. But yeah, there were a bunch of cartoons starring animal type characters around the same time as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Hmm. Yeah, and you know, the Ninja Turtles to me are something like that will probably never go away. I'm sure they're going to try to reboot the film again. And we did, you know, the animated film was pretty decent, even though it didn't have Shredder in it. I thought the animation was well done in it. You know, they also did. Did y'all see that Turtles Forever movie they did for Nickelodeon? It was directed TV and DVD. That was really good. Where they mixed the 87 Turtles. The 90s Turtles and the black and white Turtles from the comics. That was really good. That was actually really well done. It's cool because some of the sequences are animated in black and white like the comics. And they talk like the narration. They're like, we will jump over the building. We will be in the shadows. And we will fight the bad guys. And it's really, really cool how it's done. That's worth watching, that Turtles Forever movie they did. But I think the Turtles are a great franchise. And a friend of mine who does his own books, Mark Nasso, he's heavily influenced by the Ninja Turtles. You can even see it in his artwork and stuff. It's one of his favorite things to be influenced by. And kids today are still loving the Ninja Turtles, even 30 years later. And, you know, one day we'll probably get another movie, and maybe they'll make it darker. Maybe they'll make it. You know, actually, the reboots, the only thing I didn't like about the reboots were the slimy-looking turtles. It was kind of weird. They were a little scary. It was like,
yeah, they were kind of freakish.
Yeah, I didn't really have a problem with the movies. I didn't have a problem with Megan Fox or any of the dialogue or the plot. It's just the turtles were a little scary looking. Even I was like, they're not real, like, they're not comforting. but they are what they were. You know, hey, in part two, we got Megan Fox in a schoolgirl outfit. So, you know, I'm not going to complain about that.
That's true.
But overall, I think that the original Ninja Turtles holds up pretty well. I give it a pretty solid B+, you know, because some of that's nostalgic factor and the fact that the time it was made. I think it does a pretty good job of doing what it turned out to do in 1990.
Yeah. Yeah. It still brings a smile to my face when I rewatched it. Right now, I've kind of grown past the Turtles. So, you know, I'm like, that's cool. You know, but it's like one of those franchises for me personally that I've outgrown that I don't really feel nostalgic about, you know? Yeah. So that's just me, though.
Yeah. Because, you're just an old fart.
The world is the world has gone dark, and it doesn't bring me joy anymore. No, I'm joking.
Well then, all right.
All right.
I think that says enough about the Ninja Turtles. Just depresses people now. And okay, so we're gonna do things.
Well, Matt didn't give his final thoughts on the movie.
Oh, I thought he said B plus.
I said B plus. Yeah.
B plus.
Okay. We'll give some final thoughts, Matt, on the Ninja Turtles.
Where does B plus on my end.
You, Matt, being 10 years younger than us, how do you still feel about the Ninja Turtles?
Man, I kind of get what Long is saying to an extent. It definitely hasn't, like, I guess, aged well with me as, like, you know, carried on and held the same weight. But it always holds, like, a special, you know, place in my heart because I grew up with it. And it's like, you know, whenever you're a kid and Power Rangers came up and you want your friend was Leonardo, and then you were Donatello, and then someone else is Michelangelo, and then other people were the Foot Clan, and you play fight and stuff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, all the toys, and, you know, my mom, she had to buy me the whole set. So, like, they came out with the baseball Ninja Turtles, and so I have the whole set somewhere, like, loose, obviously. But it's like, I had tons of turtle toys. They didn't have a Foot Clan van, and so my uncle bought me a Ninja Turtle van and painted it black with a foot symbol. He made a custom stencil and then made a foot symbol on it.
Oh, that's cool.
So that I could also have a foot van. And I was just really into it, the toys, and spend that much, you know, time of your childhood trying to beat the arcade game, because it was hard. You know, Konami, what, 3 lives and 2 restarts or whatever, and then, you know, you're gone. And the shrink ray at the end, you know, me and my cousin would play that thing over and over and over again. So
it's funny because on my Xbox 360, I have a digital copy of it on there because they used to have it for sale on Xbox Arcade. That's really probably one of the only reasons I keep my 360. It's because I have Ninja Turtles and the X-Men arcade game on there.
That's awesome. But yeah, man, I think it's, you know, to Long's extent, I don't think it's as exciting to talk about it now. But it's definitely one of those things that you're like, man, whenever I was little, this was the thing, you know, and it was great. And I feel like you just can't capture that anymore with what they're bringing out now. It's very apples and oranges, but I'm glad that they're trying. They're trying to, you know, reintroduce turtles to, you know, the new generation.
Yeah.
But that's my final thoughts.
Yeah. You make a good point there before we get into the next section of the show, though. It's like movies like this that came out that time, whether it's the Turtles or Jurassic Park or even Terminator 2, when you see the T-1000, you don't get that experience anymore hardly ever at the theaters or with new movies where you're truly surprised and excited when you see something on screen, because they give us so much of the trailers and the internet and pre-selling the movies now. They tried really hard with Endgame to keep spoilers at a low, same with Rise of Skywalker. And they, for the most part, they did a pretty good job. But there is something to be said about pre-internet days, the excitement of going to a movie and being thrilled and surprised by something, or opening up a comic book and being surprised, and everything's not given to you. And sometimes I wish the internet newsmakers and stuff would back off on stuff and let people be a little more excited for things. But it is the world we live in now.
So. Yeah, can we also make one small note, footnote, pun intended.
Footnote.
Ernie Reyes Jr., do you remember that young child actor back in the 80s? Mark, the Ernie Reyes, familiar. He was in a TV show, but he was a little Asian kid who knew martial arts. I think he was Filipino, but he played Donatello as a stunt suit actor. He was in Red Sonja. Cool. Remember Red Sonja?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was that little kid in Red Sonja.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And he grew up to play Donatello, but he's been doing like motion capture and stunt work ever since the Turtles movie. So,
yeah.
Little tidbit.
So. Yeah.
Nice little fact.
Yeah.
Nice little fact and good stuff. So, But Ninja Turtles, watch it. You can watch it for free on Vudu right now. It's usually on Netflix a lot. It comes and goes from Netflix, you know. And so, yeah, if you haven't watched it in a while, check it out. And so let's do a little bit of news before we get into our weekly top five, because there's not a whole lot of news. It's been kind of a slow week. Ruby Rose has left the Batwoman TV show after just one season, which was kind of interesting. You know, no reason was given. Some people believe that she might have been a little hard to work with. there's been some rumors of that. There's a lot of talk that's why she did not come back for John Wick 3, that she's not always the easiest person to work with. There's been people that, I guess, on the set of Orange is the New Black had difficulties getting along with her at times. So it's probably one of those situations where there's more than we'll ever know as to why she was not coming back for Batwoman Season 2. Yeah. But they're going to recast the role. So, you know.
Well, I mean,
so fans of Batwoman.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I said fans of Batwoman, you'll get a new Batwoman next season. I watched like 3 episodes just out of curiosity. It wasn't terrible, the show, you know, but it's still the typical CW type stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt that, I mean, being in television is not, it's not easy compared to being on film.
Takes up a lot of your time.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because you show up there at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock call time, and then you don't leave until maybe 10 or 11.
Right.
You know, in the evening.
Well, that's why I still think that's why Andrew Lincoln left The Walking Dead, because he got involved with The Walking Dead, thinking, you know, this is going to be 5 or 6 years, but they kept making the show go on and on and on. And he lives in London, so he was having to come to Atlanta for 6 months out of the year and be away from his family, and he has children and stuff. And I think Andrew Lincoln just had enough of it. You know, it's like, okay, y'all have no end game for this show, but yet you keep wanting to drag me away from my family for half the year. And I think that's why he chose to leave The Walking Dead. And so TV, especially network TV, when you're doing 16 to 20 episodes, I think that's why you're seeing a lot more big stars like Jason Momoa and some of these guys will do these Netflix and Amazon shows, because it's 10 episodes. They go film for like 6 weeks and they're done. You know, it's almost like making a movie when you're making a TV show. That's why I think you're seeing a lot more big stars do that kind of stuff. But the other big news this week was, you know, for 2 years now, we keep hearing about release the Snyder cut. The Zack Snyder never got to do his cut of the Justice League film. Of course, the one that came into theaters was put together by Joss Whedon after Snyder had to leave the film early due to the death of his child. And so, you know, he took some time off from filmmaking, and now he's coming back, and Warner Brothers has given him $20 to $30 million to finish his cut of the Justice League film. And this has been met by a lot of excitement on the internet. You know, I think a lot of people, Zack Snyder has his haters, but I think overall in the community of the genre that most people like what Zack Snyder does. And I think people are excited to see his cut, which is rumored to be up to 4 hours long, a lot more Cyborg stuff in it, a lot more Superman stuff in it. Just please get rid of the damn CGI mustache at the beginning of the film, you know, and see what he did, what his cut was going to be. You know, he's already mentioned that it definitely ties in more with Batman versus Superman, some of the other things he has set up. You know, according to him, we only saw maybe a third of what he had intended with the cut. That's
said a quarter, so, a quarter,
yeah, a quarter is a quarter. So I'm pretty excited about this. It's going to be on HBO Max next spring, probably. I'm down for it. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I heard it could be split up into 2 or 3 episodes.
Yeah,
it may not be one movie. Yeah,
right. Hey, if that
I heard there's a Snyder cut of Scooby Doo.
What does that have to do with anything we're talking about, Matt?
I just tried to be random, but I'm excited for the Snyder cut. Hopefully, it's not like you know, what was that one movie that is split into 4 chapters?
Crash
that
and burn, Matt. Crash and burn.
I tried to recover. Stop bringing it back up.
The Hateful Eight.
Hateful Eight. I guess it's going to be the Hateful Eight of the DC universe.
Yeah.
Have like.
I'm just glad people are going to shut up about the Snyder cut. Oh my God, my Twitter feed. Yeah, my Twitter feed had this one dude who was involved in that production. And like every day he's retweeting or liking something that has to do with the Snyder Cut every day. Like I'm talking about dozens of tweets, and I'm like, okay, I need to unfollow you, dude, because you need to like lighten up on the Snyder Cut.
In some ways though, the fans, it worked. The campaign for the fans was strong enough that Warner Brothers saw that there was a room for it, and Snyder said as far back as November, he's been talking to Warner Brothers like, hey, maybe there's some real money in this. Let's do this thing. And they finally got together, and I think he had to finish his Army of the Dead film first before he could get started on finishing his cut. And so I think it's a good thing. I think at the end of the day, the fans are going to win with this because I think everybody wants to see it. Even the people that are hating on Zack Snyder, they're going to watch this thing. They're going to check it out. They're going to be excited for it.
So they can hate on it.
So I think if they do, they do. You know. Yeah. But you know what's funny is I've noticed a movement on the internet. Like it seems to be that people are coming around to Man of Steel now. Like a lot more people are liking it than they used to. And which I always thought Man of Steel was really good. So you know, so maybe they'll come around to liking this new version of the Justice League. Yeah, we'll see. We just have to wait for it now.
And now they're talking about the Ayer cut for
Fuck that Suicide guy, dude. Squad.
I know. And like they already, what are they talking about? They released a uncut version of the film already.
Yeah,
it's 15 more minutes.
Yeah.
I'm like,
because I think I have that movie because I picked up in half price books for like $3 on clearance, and I think it has the uncut extended version on it or something. I remember watching it. And it's a little bit better, but that movie's still not great, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, nah, that guy, screw him. You're not Zack Snyder, dude. You're David Ayer. I think Snyder has a little more clout, you know. And rightfully.
A very distinctive filming style, too.
Oh, for sure. I like Snyder's action sequences quite a bit. I think his action sequences are really good. I mean, like, Sucker Punch isn't a very good movie, but the action sequences in it are extraordinary.
Yeah.
You know, the guy's got a good eye. You know, I like Zack Snyder. And the thing about Snyder, too, is when you listen to him in interviews and stuff, he's not like Michael Bay. He's not overly egotistical. He listens to fans. He tries to make the best movie he can. I think Snyder truly tries to make good movies. He's not in it just for money like Bay and some of these guys are, you know? So,
yeah.
So there is a difference in him, I believe, in the films he tries to make. So I'm excited for it. I'm excited for his Army of the Dead, too, because I really like the Dawn of the Dead. So I think that's going to be a cool sequel to watch, too, when it comes out. So, but that's really all the news. But that leads to our weekly top five, a new weekly segment we started a couple weeks ago, which isn't always necessarily a top five. Sometimes it's just a list of different things we want to talk about. And so it got me thinking about director's cuts. And this is not something new. I was reading online, like, somebody go, man, this is cool. I never heard of a director doing this. Well, that person must have been 20 years old because director's cuts have been around for a long time. They were a real big thing in the late 80s and early 90s to sell VHS tapes. They like, let's put out a director's cut of a film so we can sell more VHS tapes to give people something more to see. And then, of course, DVD came around. There were special editions of DVDs and more footage. So getting a director's cut of a film is nothing new. The thing lately seems to be an extended cut where they might add 7 or 8 minutes back into a film. But that's not that's not truly a director's cut. Director's cut is when a director goes in and recuts elements of the film, adds scenes back in. Sometimes they add music, special effects, different things like that. So it got me thinking what some of the more popular director's cuts have been over the years. So I've got a little list that we could talk about on those. I'm going to start with another famous comic movie. It's the original Superman the movie, which actually has 3 different versions of that film. We have the film that came out theatrically. We have the extended cut, which was put out when the movie came out on DVD back in 2004. And then there's the recently released television cut, which is almost 3 hours long, which was only aired on ABC like one time. And they recently remastered it for Blu-ray and put that out. And out of those versions, I like the extended cut the best because it adds just enough to the film. The television cut's interesting to watch, but it's way too long. It's like there's a bunch of Lex Luthor stuff in it that you don't need anything. It's basically just adding some small elements in the film.
What movie again?
But that's why Superman the movie.
Oh, okay. And where was Superman that placed?
I didn't really rank them. I'm listing off some different director's cuts.
Yeah.
Well, I guess these are kind of my honorable mentions. Of course, Francis Ford Coppola has done several different cuts of Apocalypse Now. I think it's like 4 or 5 different cuts now. People say the latest cut they think is one of the best versions of the film ever made. I've actually never seen that movie, believe it or not. I've seen parts of Apocalypse Now. I've actually never sat down and watched the whole thing.
Yeah.
One day.
The final cut for Coppola?
Yeah. Oh, speaking of, I didn't talk about this and download this, but I'm going to go a little rant here, a little tangent. I did watch for the first time ever Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and I don't really like it that. I didn't like it that much. It was okay.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. It's like it's part comedy, part serious. I didn't really know what to make of it. I'm like,
yeah.
Like Robert Redford and Paul Newman are really great in the movie, but overall, it just wasn't my cup of tea as far as the Western goes. That was okay.
What was the movie that they were also famous for it being together? The Sting. They were in The Sting, yeah. Right?
Same so, director.
Right. Yeah, was this same movie? Too. Was Butch Cassidy made after The Sting or before?
I think it was before. Yeah, Sting was in the 70s and Butch Cassidy was like 69.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah. And another honorable mention I have is a film that I'm mentioning because I've actually had a request to do this film on the show from our friend Winter. It's a little out of our genre, but it is a great movie. And that's Cameron Crowe's Almost Famous, about him being a rock and roll writer back in the 60s. It's kind of a life story of Cameron Crowe himself. And the director's cut for that film is really, really good. It's one of those director's cuts that make the movie so much better than the original version. So I had to throw that in there for honorable mention, give that a mention. And then I kind of have six top ones in no particular order, really. Obviously, Blade Runner, man. Blade Runner has had three or four cuts from Ridley Scott. The final cut is the most recent version. Long, I know you've seen the movie. Do you have a favorite version of Blade Runner? Some people like the original with the narration, and some people like the newer cuts without the narration.
You know what? Funny you mentioned that because I had your copy of Final Cut, and I've been meaning to. I started watching it, and for some reason, something interrupted my day, so I wasn't able to get back to it. So it's at the same exact spot I left off, like in the first 20 minutes, right in the scene where Decker was being asked by the police department to go find the replicants.
Right.
And that's the spot where I always end up stopping at. So, but I heard the final cut was the best.
I like the final cut. Yeah.
Yeah. In general, people like it more.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one I've seen.
Yeah. So you're going through your top five? Yeah.
I just kind of going through. A movie we covered on the show last year, and we did cover the director's cut, because it's kind of, this is one of those movies where the director's cut has kind of become the standard, and that is Highlander. If you've ever seen the original Highlander and the director's cut, they are very much different films. The director's cut is completely re-edited. It's a much better version. It flows much better. It makes more sense. Not that the original didn't make sense, but just the way that Macaulay went back and edited Highlander, it was more true to his vision that he wanted to do, and a much better version of the film. And I know, Matt, you probably agree with me on that because you watched it when we did it on the show last year.
Yeah.
Or it was a couple years since we did Highlander, I guess. Before I get to all the famous James Cameron director's cuts, obviously, Peter Jackson went back in on Lord of the Rings, all three of them.
Oh, yeah.
Extended versions, director's cuts, which are essentially, the Lord of the Rings films are really good on their own, but the extended versions just add a lot more to the films and are just as good. Some people might argue. Better. Yeah, they flesh them out better. I really like the Fellowship's extended version because I think it adds a lot to the story. I remember that, if I remember right, the Two Towers has the least amount of stuff added to it. And then the Return of the King has a lot of cool stuff at the end added with the Mouth of Sauron and all that. That was pretty cool. Some of that stuff made me wish it was in the theatrical version, but the movie was already 3.5 hours long, so it was hard to have 30 more minutes of stuff in the theatrical version. And, there's rumors that Peter Jackson has even more footage of those films that he has he's teased several times in interviews where he might put out new other versions of the films, like, after they've been out for like 30 years or something. So one day maybe we'll get even extended versions of the Lord of the Rings. And then the guy who I think in some ways made the director's cut popular, and that was James Cameron. We did, just a couple weeks ago, we did Aliens. Of course, there's a special edition of that version. Terminator 2, which we've covered on the show, which also has a special edition version. With a lot of added footage to it. But my favorite director's cut of his is The Abyss, which the Abyss is a good film on its own, one that I definitely want to cover on the show one day. But the director's cut is such The Director's Cut is such an extraordinarily better film. It fleshes out the story. It adds so much to it. It has some amazing special effect work done in the special edition. If you've never taken the time to see the special edition of The Abyss, highly recommend it. It is one of James Cameron's gems of a film that a lot of people don't talk about, but it's such a good movie. So highly recommend that Director's Cut of The Abyss. And that's all I had on my list. I mean, there's other movies I had thought of that have, you know, extended versions and small differences, but those are the big ones I could think of.
Yeah, I'm still pissed that The Abyss hasn't come out on Blu-ray yet after all these years.
I know.
Yeah.
And then last year Cameron teased it that he was working on a remaster of it, and then that was it. You know, Cameron teased it with like a social media post. So
yeah,
you know.
Then they went to Avatar.
Right. Yeah. And Cameron openly admitted that, you know, he was waiting for 4K to be a standard thing, and now that it is, I think he wants to go back and remaster those films. Because he has Titanic out and Terminator out, so maybe we'll get The Abyss and True Lies eventually, you know, in Blu-ray versions.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
I was just thinking True Lies. You know, there's a rumor out there, that's one director's cut that James Cameron has never released, but, you know, there's been a rumor that he had teased one time that there is like a 3-hour cut of True Lies out there.
Oh, wow.
So maybe one day it'll come out with a Blu-ray. So.
With I'm game for that. Naked Jamie Lee Curtis?
Yeah.
Anyways, but I'll add two more movie titles that the director's cut fundamentally changed the movie from its theatrical to its director's vision. One was Batman versus Superman, the director's cut. Oh yeah. My gosh. It made so much more sense.
Especially Luthor's story made a lot more sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it was just like, wow, Superman isn't an asshole, you know, right. In the director's cut, you know, he was more heroic. Yeah. And, it just changed the tone of Batman versus Superman. And I remember when I watched the theatrical version, there was like so many like, what the hell is going on in this movie? It was like, this is random. Why is this in there? You know, right. But the director's cut helped smooth a lot of things out. And then my other choice of movie director's cut is Kingdom of Heaven.
I was on one of the lists I was looking at.
I've never seen the theatrical cut, but I saw the director's cut first of Kingdom of Heaven, and that was just it's a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. It's definitely one of Ridley Scott's top movies he's ever made. Yeah, if you've never seen Kingdom of Heaven, watch the director's cut. I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
Makes you want to become a crusader. No.
I'll think that, you know, Zack Snyder, you know, now he's doing the Justice League. You know, he's done the Batman vs. Superman. Watchmen has a director's cut, which is arguably a better version of the film. So, you know, Zack Snyder's kind of known for doing director's cuts, too. I think there is even a slightly different version of his Dawn of the Dead. I think the one that came out on Blu-ray is uncut and a little bit longer version. So, you know, Snyder's been known to do that, too, so it seems. Because I think I read somewhere, speaking of Snyder, I think he's even teased a different version of Sucker Punch that's out there. But he's even admitted, too, though, that Sucker Punch didn't make any money. So the studio is probably never going to give him money to recut Sucker Punch and make the version that he wants to make. So we'll probably never get that. But so Snyder's become kind of one of those guys like James Cameron that likes to put out longer versions of his films. So I think it's cool, though, man. I've never had a problem with that. I know people like to bitch about the Star Wars special editions, things like that. I think if a movie is made at a certain time and technology allows them to go back and fix a film or re-edit a film and make a better version, why not? I'm all for that. To me, movies are like art. Art can be changed and adapted and made better. And I'm fine with that. So, you know. Yeah. But, Matt, you look like you were going to say something. Or you're falling asleep.
No, I mean, you guys pretty much mentioned all the notable director's cuts. I mean, there's other ones out there that, you know, some people hold in high regard. Some people like the last 2 minutes of The Shining, where they reveal that Jack's body was never found. So kind of leaves that open to interpretation. And then they even had a director's cut of Doctor Sleep. But haven't looked into that. It's from something I need to look into. Big fan of Stephen King, like Dr. Sleep. But yeah, I mean, you guys pretty much covered it all. I mean, Lord of the Rings, Highlander, Superman 2. Did we mention Superman 2 or
well,
just Superman?
But see, the thing about Superman 2 is I don't consider the Richard Donner cut a director's cut because the movie's not truly complete. It's just, you know, it's more what Donner's vision could have been if he had been given a chance than if he had not been fired and given a chance to finish this Superman 2. So, you know, it's not really a truly complete director's cut. They just put that out there as a version to, you know, it's not to see what could have been if Donner had done his film, you know.
I thought it was a very interesting cut.
A what?
That's for sure. The Richard Donner.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a neat watch for sure, but it's unfortunately just not the complete vision. So I don't know if you could call it a true director's cut. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No. Yeah. Kind of hard to do when Christopher Reeve has passed away as well.
Right. Right, so you know, but it's a neat watch. So those some director's cuts to check out for our weekly top five list there. So before we get out of here, let's preview next week's film, man, as we are finally, after 6 years of podcasting, we're reaching the 200th episode. It's going to be a big one. We, of course, are going to discuss The Empire Strikes Back.
Luke Skywalker and Han Solo rescued the princess, destroyed the Death Star, but their story didn't end there. Now, the creators of the biggest smash hit of all time bring you the next episode in the Star Wars saga, The Empire Strikes Back. Continuing story of our band of heroes. Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, Han Solo, C-3PO, R2-D2, and Chewbacca. And introducing Lando Calrissian. It's an epic of romance. Of heroes and villains. They cross trackless voids to unknown worlds. A galactic odyssey against oppression. Big, new, sprawling space adventure in the Star Wars saga, The Empire Strikes Back. Coming to your galaxy next summer.
This movie just hit 40 years old this week. Of course, we're all big Star Wars fans. For the 100th episode, we did Star Wars. So for 200th episode, we're going to do the sequel because that makes sense. And arguably the greatest Star Wars film ever made. And should be a lot of fun looking back at The Empire Strikes Back and the making of it and going behind the scenes. Looks like we'll have a guest on the show next week to celebrate 200 episodes with us. And it should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. And we're going to look back at some great memories we have of the Rebel Radio podcast. Reminisce a little bit and make a epic 200th episode. Don't seem so excited, guys. Fucking hell.
I agree. We are going to have a badass 200 episode.
Jeez. He didn't really give us a good segue, by the way.
Well, I just figured you'd play off of my excitement, but no.
Yeah.
You know?
And how? No, I'm sorry. No.
And how?
I remember how Empire Strikes Back was definitely a downer. That was it. And for me, Empire Strikes Back was the first Star Wars movie that I ever watched. So I never saw the first one, but I saw Empire before Star Wars. So I remembered it being such a downer of a movie.
Yeah, I can see that on first watch, But now that years later we know what happens next, it's not as bad. So, you know. But yeah, so that should be fun to talk next week as we celebrate 200 episodes of the show. Looking forward to it. I almost wish that I could just skip the week and we jump to 200 because it's going to be a lot of fun. So, but we can't do that, unfortunately. We have to go to a thing called work and crap. So, you know, it is what it is. But that's all I got today, man. A lot of fun talking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles today. And remember to go to the RebelRadioPodcast.com and join our Patreon for just $2 a month. You can get an exclusive episode every month. And join our social media links so you can keep track of what's going on with this crazy show we do. And we appreciate all your support to allow us to make it to 200 episodes. And but we'll do some more thank yous next week when we hit that 200th episode, unless for some reason the world falls apart and we don't make it to 200. You know, which the way 2020 is going, you never fucking know. But let's hope not. Let's hope we're able to still be here next week and talk The Empire Strikes Back for our 200th episode. But this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long.
And we will see you guys next week. As always, remember, just go there and
do it. Go there and do it.
Do it.
This is Chuck Huber. You're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast. Stop being so awesome.